You know, I should have began this message with the kids. I mean, I should have had them. When they were here, I should have told them this story. But I wanted to save it for the message, so I didn't get it, I guess. But I got to talk about, what I'm going to talk about today is, next week is going to be Fifth Sunday. So I'm not going to give the message next week. And then Founders Day is the week after that. So I won't be giving the message for 2 weeks. And so Halloween is coming up. So I've got to talk about it. You know, I mean, I'm not going to miss that opportunity. But, you know, even. And so what I wanted to talk about, and like I said, the kids would have been great here. Does anybody remember the very first time they went trick-or-treating? Do you remember what you wore? The first time you were trick-or-treating. Do you remember? Harold? Do you know?
Princess.
What? Harold, you were a witch? What?
Do you something like that.
Something like that.
I wish I remember.
Anybody else have any memories of the very first time they went trick-or-treating?
Princess.
Princess. Yeah. All right. I can see that. Princess Lisa. All right, well, I'll tell you what I was, all right? I'll tell you what I at the time, I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I had an incredible thing, an amazing thing for a guy named Spider-Man. I don't know if you know the character Spider-Man at all. It's based on me and some of my exploits. Even by 6 or 7, it was about... Anyway, yeah, I was really in love with Spider-Man. I wasn't really much of a Superman guy, but the idea of being able to shoot webs out of my hands and swing from buildings and stuff. And I remember when Mom came home with our first costumes for Halloween, and we had heard about this, and all the candy, and all the goodies, and all that stuff, and she showed me my Spider-Man outfit. I was so excited. And I was so excited I wasn't my brother who got Batman, right? And so anyway, I remember I put on the mask. So what we did is it was basically, I looked just like Spider-Man if Spider-Man was wearing pajamas, okay? And I remember that there was a mask on it that it sort of stuck right to your face. And it just got planted there. And you couldn't really breathe through it because there were just two little bitty holes. It looked just like Spider-Man. It looked just like him. It was right there. It was right on your face. And I remember carrying it around. And I remember it got really hot and sweaty. Well, anyway, on that first night or whatever, it was just as it got dark or whatever, we started to go around, and I went to the first house, and the woman opened the door, and she was like, oh, my goodness. And I was with a whole bunch of kids. And she's like, oh, what incredible costumes you have. And she was looking right at me. Okay, she was looking at me when she said it. And the second one was like that as well. It was another, I mean, just a great haul of stuff. And I went to the third one. I went to the third one, and I was just so happy, and I was just going along. And I remember one of those things with those masks is you could hardly see out of them. Right? They sort of stuck to your eyes as well. And I was just going along, looking to the next house. And I heard my sister a little too late say, stop! As I just tumbled into a ditch. One of those big drainage ditches with the rocks and the things. And I didn't even see it. And I remember I tumbled down, I was bruised, and I was cut or whatever a little bit. And it's sort of interesting. I had the same sort of smears that Spider-Man gets after a big adventure. You know, he has like that smear on him a little bit. But I noticed that the mask that I was wearing, the one that was stuck to my face, in the fall, the little string had snapped off. But it was interesting. It was like that, because when it snapped off, I started to walk around, and I felt, this is going to sound crazy, I felt more like Spider-Man. I was able to leap more and jump more and see. It's almost like when I finally took off the mask, I was able to see. I'm going to tell you about a lot of my friends from other congregations in the past was a minister. The first one I'm going to talk about is my friend named Annabelle, or Belle. And this was the time I was a pastor of a small little meeting there in rural Maine. Small little meeting in Maine. And Annabelle was a person who had just moved back to Maine full time. Before, she had lived 6 months in Maine to be with her mom, who was 97 years old, and still shoveled her walk when it snowed, and we would watch the Red Sox together, she and I religiously. And anyway, she had come back to be closer to her mom full time, but before then, she was what is called a snowbird. I don't know if you know what those are. They are people who are in Maine during the beautiful summer months, and then when it's terribly cold in the winter, they go somewhere south or warm. And where Annabelle would go is she would go to Apple County, California. And I don't know if you know who lives in Apple County, but it is so crazy. This is, I do not jest, this woman, Annabelle, who had a little bitty ranch out there in California, was best friends with Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. They were neighbors together, and if they were both there at the same time, you know, in the middle of, I guess, the winter, and they were not doing anything, you would invariably see them together. And Annabelle would show me pictures. Oh, there's Roy, and there's Dale, 67th. They knew each other incredibly well. Anyway, she had moved back to Maine full-time because her mom was now 97, going on 98, and still doing her own walk. And she had a little farm out there in Maine. And I remember one day she came in, and we were watching the Red Sox. They were losing. And she came in, and she was so covered in dirt and sweat. Now, I got to tell you something about her. Annabelle, I never saw Annabelle, unless it was a funeral or a wedding, where she was not dressed like a cowgirl. That's what she wore. She wore cowgirl attire everywhere she went. You would see her. Now, I always imagined myself as, what would I want to do if I looked like a cowboy? I'd be like Clint Eastwood, you know, with my long, you know. But she dressed like a 1950s, like, television cowgirl with the little tassels and the blue jeans. And like I said, the only time I saw her in a dress, and it was amazing, was at someone's funeral. And I remember asking her someday, I said, now, hey, Annabelle, have you always dressed like that? Because that's not Maine wear, really. L.L. Bean is Maine wear. You always dress like that? She said, you know what? No, I didn't. I didn't dress like that. Now, she had been like a social worker in a city in Portland for years and years and years. And every day she got up and she dressed just like everybody else. Just like everybody. Just going to work, doing her thing, dressing like everybody. But she knew deep down in her heart, she was a cowgirl. She just knew it. And one day, on some Monday morning or Tuesday or whatever it was, like she was going to do and wake up and go to work or whatever, she had one little, she liked to ride horses, and like I said, she had a little farm out there. One day she looked at what she had, and she had one cowgirl outfit she got for some rodeo or something like that, and she put it on that day, sort of odd looks. And the next day she wore it again. And then she wore it again, and then she got more cowgirl outfits and more. And that's what she wore. And she says, you know what? I just knew in my heart that I had to be this way. That I had to dress and be a cowgirl. Now, when I look in Scripture, I was looking for different elements of mask in Scripture. And the first of the stories, there's not a lot of stories in Scriptures. It's not as big as you would imagine you would have. The first of these stories is Tamar and Judah. And how many here know Tamar and Judah as that story? And what Tamar and Judah and all that sort of story? Does anybody know that? Lisa, you know? Gosh, it's a pretty rough story. It's pretty tough. Tamar has to sort of pretend to be somebody else in order to get what she feels like she needs to get. It is so, you can't even tell that story in polite company, much less meeting. It's pretty tough. The story I want to talk about, the one that I think really sort of hits home, is the story, sort of one we've been talking about for the last little bit. It comes up again. It's Jacob and Esau, which is sort of ironic because I myself am a twin. And I'm the good twin, I'm just going to say. You don't want to know what my brother is, okay. And I'm coming back to the story, and if you remember, Jacob, or Jacob, is his nickname is sort of deceiver, or one who grasps, or grasp at the heel. And anyway, if we last remember, Esau has sold his birthright, his firstbornness, this is in Genesis chapter 26, for a really good pot of red stew, which is ironic because Esau's name is Red, so red stew. And we always sort of blame Esau, and we call him sort of dumb for selling his birthright like that. But if you've ever really been hungry, really hungry, who knows what you would sell? Well, the next one of these stories is Isaac, their pop, is just about to pass away. And he's got to give his blessing to his sons. And, of course, he wants to give the really good blessing to Esau, his favorite son, who's a good hunter. A doodly dude. And he wants to bless me. He says, Esau, go out there and hunt for me, and I want you to get me two good, nice deer out there and cook them just like you cook them and bring them back here, because after a good meal, I love to bless. It doesn't say it exactly like that. But what happens is Rebekah overhears his wife, as wives will often do, they overhear. And her favorite is Jacob, or Jacob. And so what she does, and Jacob probably would have never even thought about it, never even contemplated it, but she sort of eggs him in getting him to dress up in Esau's clothing. She kills two young little goats and puts the hair on his arms. And she gets him to go in there, and he agrees, and he goes in, and they go in, and Isaac hears the voice of Jacob, and yet he feels that the arm of Esau and smells his clothes because his eyes are no more good. And twice Isaac asks Jacob, are you Esau or Jacob? And two times Jacob lies to his dad. And of course gets the blessing. Right? The blessing, he gets the blessing. He gets all that blessing and all that land and the descendants, the stars. And I mean, we all. And Esau comes back and gets nothing. Nothing. And it all happens. It's all true. And it all works out like it. It does it? I mean, is that how God works? Jacob getting it in the nick of time. What if Esau had just been a little bit better hunter, okay? Or the deer a little bit easier to find? Would we be all speaking Edomite now? Is that how God works? Is God's blessing like that? And we think about Jacob's reward and Jacob's blessing. Is he really blessed? He's a fugitive now. His brother is furious and wants to kill him, and Rebekah sends him way to the far north to get him the heck away. He's a fugitive. He uses stones as pillows. That's a reward. That's your great blessing. He ends up a slave himself for 14 years, deceived by his uncle by the veil of Leah. And all the time afraid that Esau, if he got his hands on him, that's his blessing. You know, I got to give a shout out to Rachel right now because she's the one who sort of, she's like, well, what is the message? And so here's what she came up. She says, when the mask we have doesn't equal God's understanding of ourselves, we're in trouble. In fact, what she said, God knows exactly who we are. God knows exactly who we are. And we know who we are. And if those things are not sort of together or they're not, that's when we get in trouble. That's when the problems start. Yeah, I'm going to finish up this with a story, another story. And you're like, golly, won't he just read a poem? Okay. Yeah, so many stories. I knew a guy at my very first congregation I was ever at, a little town called Eaton, Ohio. And he was a guy named Lance Pierce Jr. And he was the son of Lance Pierce, who was a former legislator, a judge, famous attorney. He himself was a famous attorney in the congregation that I was at. He had this incredible Sunday school performance he would do every week. And it is rumored, as an attorney, he never lost a case. He's like Perry Mason. He never lost a case. And you would believe it if you ever saw his Sunday school class. Incredible. He had this huge farm that he named Runnymede. Anybody know what Runnymede is? Gosh, I wish it would be great. It's a bit of trivia, okay? Runnymede is the place where King John was forced to sign Magna Carta, which he said was the very first act of law and recorded. He had a way of saying things. And I remember, so he had these, and he had these prize Jersey cows who make the best cream. He said, the best cream comes from those Jersey cows. They were award-winning. And it was so funny. He would drive me around in the back of his 1978 Cadillac DeVille or something like that, or Buick or something. And he would be smoking his pipe, and he'd be sort of yelling at Lorene, his wife. And he was just such a funny, incredible character. In fact, he was the kind of guy, I remember sitting on a seat there, one of these benches in Eaton one day, and it was dedicated to him and his family. It was sort of crazy. Well, I remember I was at that congregation for nearly 2 years, and I was sort of in a hurry to get nowhere, right? Or a hurry to get somewhere. No, I was in a hurry. And some big city church said, hey, we think you're great. We're going to bring you up here, get you away from the country folk. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's a good thing. I guess that's the way it should be. And I remember I left and I went on a big long trip. I went to the Holy Land and I came back, and there was 1 week before I had to start the big fancy other church. And there was 1 week I could give the sermon and I could do a presentation later that evening. And that's what I did. I gave the sermon, and I saw there was a huge crowd there, and I saw Lance way back in the back there, and I'm sort of mobbed at the end of it, and I try to, and he sort of goes off. And I remember I gave the presentation that night. It was sort of like one of those slideshows that you do. And I noticed he wasn't there. I didn't really think about it much. I mean, there were plenty of other people there. Well, I found out the next day that Lance, that very night, had taken his own life. And everybody's like, wow, what? We just did Sunday school class. What? It blew us away. We really had no, what? And what we found out as in little pieces here and there, is apparently Lance was in incredible debt. And it was a lot of Peters and Pauls and Pipers and, you know, the way things people do. And he had the lie over here, and that lie had to cover another lie to cover another lie. And now why don't we just change this little figure here? And he was in big trouble. He was probably going to lose everything. He may even go to jail. The guy that never lost a case. And yet, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't take the mask that he wasn't perfect, that he hadn't figured it all out, that he wasn't the kind of person you would put a plaque on a city park bench. He couldn't live without that. And it makes me so darn mad. Because I wish I could have talked to him. I wish he had come that night. And I could have said to him, Lance, we don't care about Rummy Need. We don't care about your Jersey cows or your reputation or anything like that. We just care about you, man. We just love your smile and your wit and your obviously love of God. Even though you're not perfect, okay? You're just like all of us. We'll all be making terrible decisions down the road if you give it just enough time. The only reason why we don't is somebody looks after us and says, hey, don't do that. I think I'm asking God in a way to work with us in taking off our mask of insecurity, our mask of fear, because I think that that's what God wants, is us just to be honest with him, be ourselves, humble, knowing that no matter what we do in a way, no matter what mask we put on in a way, the only one we're really fooling is ourselves, not God or the people who love us. And so as we take off these masks, these barriers, let us know that we do so knowing that God will love us in spite of ourselves, in spite of all of our pimples and our flaws, in spite of all of our fears. An honest love for who we are.